This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. Victor Chin is an artist, documentary filmmaker, and activist, and his latest art exhibition called Fixing Memories documents the changing facades of shop houses in the Strait Settlements of Malaysia and Singapore through his watercolors and ink drawings. But his work is also a critique of modernization as well as local conservation practices. So the exhibition will be on at the Alliance Française Kuala Lumpur until the 18th of December, and Victor is here with me today to tell us more. How are you doing, Victor?
I'm fine. Thank you, Sharmila, for inviting me to be on air.
Not at all. I love your paintings. The watercolors are, you know, they're just, they really bring to life the shop houses that they depict. But for those people who may have not yet seen the works, you know, could you walk us through the exhibition? What will the visitors see?
Yes. These watercolors, which I've done, were done 30 years ago. 30 years ago, I was quite a sort of a big name in the local art scene, talking about this idea of a need for a much more humane way of looking at our towns and cities. That's 30 years ago. But today, 30 years later, it is still an urgent issue about how some of our towns and cities are disappearing. And the conditions of our cities are under stress in many ways. So my work of the four towns that you mentioned, which are the earliest towns.
So that would be Malacca, Penang, Ipoh, and Singapore.
No, the earliest Strait Settlement towns were Malacca, yeah, then Penang, and then Singapore. Then I happened to live in Kuala Lumpur, so right. I added KL.
Right, scene. Yes.
So together, these four towns, and also a selection of 16 pictures of each of those towns, give a visual evolution of the vernacular architecture that we have today. And now, if you look at architecture, which the way I do, not many artists does it. I'm about the only one who has given vernacular architecture a historical visual perspective in my collection of 64 work. So I begin with the earliest street, look at the earliest building, say from 1900, and then work on to 1910, and then 1930, and then 1940. So in a street, if you walk down any of our streets besides these four towns, say Kampau or Ipoh or Taiping, if you care to look up to the roof line, you will notice that the roof line on a particular street changes shape from time to time. And those changes of shape from time to time give you an idea of the dates that you can read in the history of our towns and cities. So if then walking in our street has a much more interest than just, what can I buy in those street or what is selling here? But you can also enjoy a historical perspective. Then you can know that there is a rubber boom, there was a tin boom, and there was a whatever boom in that sense. But the setting, the political and social setting, were these early buildings.
So what drew you to wanting to document the shop houses in particular?
Well, I think if 30 years ago, there was, for me, an urgent need. I was already seeing all those lovely, important neighbourhoods being demolished to make room for new ones. I mean, I'm not against development per se, but I was at that time saying that we should look at our towns and cities in a bigger picture, or take the front row, you know, look the picture and say, okay, we have 100% of this city this size. Okay, we may keep maybe just 20 or 30%, and the other 70% we can then improve or make room. So that anybody coming into the city, you can say, hey, you want to see the ancient city, the current city, or the city of the future? So you can walk through somebody and say, look, this were our earliest building, and see how we have looked after it and how with this early building brought us here today. This is a present day, so you got the high rise and all that. But you also have room then, say, these are there's also space for the future. I was asking for a much more kind of a humane way of looking at towns and cities rather than just high rise and just real estate.
So your exhibition is called Fixing Memories. What meaning does this title carry?
This idea came from the Alliance Française. They said to me, Victor, it looks like you are trying to fix your memory all these years. So I say, yeah. So I'm now fixing my memory on film. I'm also fixing my memory in an exhibition. And also, in a way, of course, I'm 70 now. Memory is also disappearing, and I'm losing it every day. So it's a kind of fixing my memory, and it's a kind of small retrospective. It's kind of me telling myself, look, Victor, this is how far you've come. Where else do you want to go from here?
I'm curious about your process of documenting these shop houses. I mean, it is a work that, you did it in the space of 15 years, I believe. Did you go? What kind of traveling did you do? How did you know? What was the process?
People say, are you an architect? I say, no, I'm not an architect. And why are you interested in architecture? I say, everybody should be a friend of architecture. Everybody should be a friend of the city in one way or the other. It depends on what you are interested in. For me, I grew up in a shop house. Shop house is not a romantic idea to me.
And where was this?
I was born in Kajang. Our family were very poor. My mother and father were tailors. We rented a room, which is a normal 10 feet by 12 feet room with one window and one door at the far end of a shop house. Now, a far end of a shop house could be like the last room, the cheapest room, near the toilet, near the kitchen. So it was not very happy working condition or living condition, but we were all poor. There were four families on the same floor, all sharing, fighting with each other, quarreling with each other, and being nasty to each other. It was a very unhappy childhood. So these are memories of my childhood that I like to put to rest in a way that a lot of us come from this kind of neighborhood and this kind of childhood. And for me, it was a way of saying this is how I grew up. And this was what made me the way I am.
So when you went around creating these watercolor paintings, how much research went into it? What kind of traveling was involved?
Of course, I wish I had some academic help and academic training, but this is all footwork. I did it in a very learn-as-you-go-along type of way. It could be called streetwise. I just happened to look at lots of books, and at that time, 30 years ago, I had some very good architectural friends, architects who tell me this or tell me that, and I listen to their talk. I read a lot about what is vernacular architecture, what architecture can do and not do for a place. So from there, you learn how to say, look at your own street. That's where I started to look at street from the point of view of the humble evolution which enable an owner to say, when do they start decorating their house in such a way? Or how do they elaborate later on, 10 years later, and then 30 years later? And then see how the street progresses in a visual way.
And in this particular exhibition, you've got the watercolors. You've got 16 examples of the larger collection of works. You've also got ink drawings. How are the ink drawings different, and what do you hope to say with them?
I have a love affair with my watercolor, and from time to time, I have a feeling that I have been unfaithful to it because I've stopped painting 20 years back. And in between, I got involved with many other things. I was doing writing for the local newspaper. I was then, for 10 years, I was then doing sort of community activism, trying to help villages, this and that, to fight for land rights and all that. So I have been waylaid, going down sort of blind alleys and, pit stops and all that stuff. But art, being an artist, it like painting or drawing, it has always been nagging me, why are you not talking to me? Or why are you not doing drawing anymore? Why are you unfaithful to me? So I kept a small notebook as I went along all these years. And these notebooks are very small and allows me to continue to think visually as a person. How do I continue to have a recorded memory of a place? So the drawing, which are ink drawing on a very small notepad, takes you on a different journey from my watercolors. The watercolors do fragments of the facade. These drawings are stamp-sized fragments of, say, maybe 8 rooms or 7 rooms or 4 spaces of a particular shop or a particular place. It is an exercise which I think helps me as an artist to continue to think what constitutes art in the kind of art that I like. Mm. The kind of art that I like is about lines, it's about shape, it's about form, and it's about color. And the kind of things I'm interested in is not the conventional perspective, which is sort of a vanishing perspective, which is very common way of looking. Artists look at it like a standard, you know, you stand from here, so the vanishing point is at the far end right. of your drawing. Everybody thinks like that. In fact, a lot of it. But then there are some artists who think differently. And the history of art has also taught us that many artists look at the world around us away from the sort of classical European vanishing perspective. The Chinese and the Japanese and the Indians and the Arabs on the eastern side has a very interesting way of developing their visual sense. They will allow themselves a kind of a bird's eye perspective of any scene that doesn't vanish in a vanishing point, mm. but there's a continuous recessing of shape. In other words, it's a moving perspective. In other words, there is no vanishing, but it's go one after there is a layered perspective. So you can see an Indian mogul miniature or a Chinese watercolor painting of the hills going one after the other, stacking on top of each other instead of going in perspective.
Right.
So I have been fascinated by the Oriental or the Eastern way of looking at things. And so for myself, I continue a dialogue with my sort of art interests in that way. So these drawings are very intimate studies, continuing a love affair with art that I have sometimes neglected.
So that's interesting for me, right? Because you're also, in essence, you're moving away from using a Western lens to study our own history. Was that something that you consciously wanted to do?
We continue to learn, Shaola. We continue to listen from BFM to the world news or documentaries. We continue to listen to people who can have alternative views of the world. In other words, the art history has not got only the Western art history which we are taught,
mm.
or the European history is not the only history that we used to be taught. Like the Malaysian history itself, there are many versions. And we should be able to be open enough as a society or as a community to say that this autocratic one way of thinking of this is the only art acceptable in the National Art Gallery, it's still possible. They still do it. Gatekeepers still are there. But you can, of course, operate on your own in a very modest way and try and invent your own style, your own manner of expression. So in our contemporary world, there are room for many kinds of artistic expression that you feel comfortable in.
Mm. Well, on that note, we do need to take a quick break. But when we come back, I really want to hear about your thoughts on, because one of the things that your work is about is talking about the idea of conservation. So I'm speaking to artist Victor Chin about his exhibition, Fixing Memories, which will be on at the Alliance Française Kuala Lumpur until the 18th of December. We'll be back after a short break. And if you have any questions or thoughts on Victor's work, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. You're listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Sharmila Ganesan. I'm speaking to artist Victor Chin about his ongoing exhibition called Fixing Memories, which documents the shop houses in the Strait Settlements of Malaysia and Singapore through watercolors and ink drawings. The show is on at the Alliance Francaise Kuala Lumpur until the 18th of December. And if you have any thoughts on his work or questions for Victor, you can tweet us at BFM Radio. You can WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899. So before the break, Victor, we talked a bit about your technique, your approach to art making. But an interesting aspect of this exhibition is also that you're pairing it with showings of a short film that you made, which is called Moved Out. And that was first screened in July this year, I believe. What is this film about?
Well, this film is about the culmination of an artist's life, architecture and community. The artist's life being my life in the last 30, 40 years, which has been documenting the visual evolution of streets. And also a homage to the architectural feature that happened to be our vernacular, even though we have inherited it without our asking for it. It's a kind of homage to, say, early architectural construction, which has no architect, no name of builders, or we call it the nameless artisans, who actually built some of the most interesting and characteristic buildings that we have of a certain period from 1900 to independence 57. Those early builders and designers and workers, humble but skillful, are all deserving of a better appreciation of for what they have done for us. So my aim was to also pay an homage to these people who are nameless, but they have left us with a street, either in Ipoh or Kampar or Kuantan, anywhere you go, with interesting roof lines, that is if they're not torn down already. This interesting roof line gives us a sense of who we are and where we have come from.
Mm. But one of the things that the film also does is sort of critique the idea of conservation itself, particularly our local architectural conservation practices here. What are you critiquing?
Well, you see, over the last 30 years, the reason I did this drawing 30 years ago was already a critique to say that we have got not many traditional important housing stock. We are really at that time tearing a lot of those interesting characteristic building down. I was already saying that we should have a much more bigger picture of town planning, where we have, say, 10 or 20% of those that we have to keep, and then the 50 or 60% that we have the present to develop, and another 10 or 15 for future development. So a city has got this historical line which includes the past, present and future. So my film brings together the thoughts that I have had over the last many years as an artist, looking at the changes, looking at the plight of our communities that live on these streets, and how over the years, due to many complex issues in the city, there is of course the landlord, there's always the developer, there's always the speculator, there's always the real estate investor, blah, blah, blah. Now, they are all, we would call vouchers, you know, they're all wanting to wanting to take a part of the city. So what can an artist do? He can only use his skill as an artist to document, put a drawing together like some of my print, then make a film. This film allows me to speak up against what is happening, which is a kind of gentrification of towns and city, where new money comes in. Just because there are new money comes in, they evict the old traditional community that, first of all, can't afford the high rental. Then, of course, they have to renovate it in the way that they have to do. And all this sort of thing has put in a lot of stress to our neighbourhood. So places like Penang and Malacca that has this UNESCO heritage status have completely destroyed its inner city community. They all have been asked to evict at short notices, drastically has to find place to live. And I think, that is one thing. The other thing is, of course, then they move in, then the new problem comes at endless buses of tourists. Of course, that's good money for some, but they destroy the street. They have completely take over, say, Malacca Street or Penang Street. They completely take over the local space. Look at Venice and look at all the other big cities. They all suffer from this same old idea of, let us make this tourist place. It's the worst thing to do to any towns and cities to turn it into a tourist place. Of course, people making money from the restaurant and hotel, of course, love it. But for the local resident, this is not actually what they want. So my film speaks up about some of this issue which, say, developers and architects and town planners don't talk about. How about the sort of pollution of the air conditioning system that they've now put into all this old building? They have to put 20 aircon to cool down one shop lot. Now, if you multiply 20 of this aircon for a whole row of 100 shop house, you know how much heat this sort of create and how much poisonous gas, CO2, is in the air, and how much this contribute to climate change, how all this sort of hot spot in our cities are, of course, contributing to the sort of comfortable feeling that you walk down in the street, besides the heavy traffic, the pollution, the crowd, and then the air conditioning system. Now, our city has been turned into quite an unpleasant place.
But what is the balance, though? You know, in conserving these old buildings, because on the one side you have the state who, you know, supposedly wants to maintain and make these buildings, preserve them for future generations, for appreciation, for architecture, for history. How do we balance between that and the needs of the communities that live there?
Of course, I am not the best person to give you that answer. And it's a very complex answer. Yeah. It's not so simple as to say this or that. And everybody has, as I say, there are vouchers everywhere, wanting to a part of the pie of the city because there's money to be made. And they say conservation will only be done if there's money to be made. In other words, anything that has to happen for the community, money has to be made. It's, of course, a kind of pathological condition that human beings have in our economic system where everything is measured in monetary terms. Everything. You look at it. So my film ends with this thought that how do we solve this problem? We can only solve this problem when we have created a system in our economic, in our social, political life where not everything is measured in monetary terms. Mm. Now, how does this carry? I really don't know. But as a thought, a simple thought, we can say, look at it without always thinking of how much money you can make out of a situation would improve. And of course, the structural plan where you have, say, plot ratios, how you can control density of a city to control the way the city's limits are. Say, for example, just Sultan Street, you have two-story building with 10 and 20-story mixed up. And then besides that, there's the 80-story, 118-story next to it, the Menara, whatever it is. Now, this is unsustainable development, which create its own sort of problem. We have, of course, plans and structural plans and blah, 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 blah. We have lots of rules and regulations, but none of these are being carried out when the politicians and the businessmen and the speculators are involved in any project, you can tell. So our city actually is suffering in many ways, besides just how it makes the artist a very unhappy person looking at our streets.
How do you depict these issues in your work? I mean, it's a sort of subtle story, isn't it?
It is. So the film allows me to speak. Mm. So you can hear my voice saying, look, this is what is happening to our city. This cobbler, this dosa guys, this rojak guy, this dressmaker, this tailor have all been evicted. Why? Because new money is coming in. New money, new money. Like, that's the only thing that, of course, that's the only thing people are thinking of. But the people who have for longest time given colour, given texture, given a calmness to a street over a longer period of development has given a street a character. People come to see your town for the character, lah. They don't come and see your town for the money you throw in. You know, those fancy, chic boutique restaurants and hotels, of course, you need some of that. But the rest, how do you keep ordinary folks, humble folks like my father and mother who are tailors or kuih sellers or cha kuih teow fellas on the street so that they can give the street the smell that we like, the colour that we like, and they are then have a secure place of a livelihood. Now, that would be an interesting idea. But for the rich guys who can throw millions and millions and to, say, build up high-rise and using it as a pure real estate speculation, we got to tell those guys, look, don't be so greedy, la. Let's be reasonable, la. But no way, la.
So you've actually been doing this for quite a while. You know, you started working on the series 30 years ago. What are the kinds of changes that you've been observing in the spaces that you've documented?
This is 30 years ago. I already thought that there were so drastic changes. And now 30 years later, it's even worse. I have if you walk down Sultan Street, there's hardly any traditional vernacular sense of place. You walk down Penang Road in Penang, you can hardly see a sort of a kuih teow cellar or a noodle cellar that has given those streets its colour and texture. Malacca the same. I don't want to mention any other places, but these are the three hot spots. I think the changes are very drastic, and even more now with kind of uncontrolled sort of thing. Wow, we could change our city into such a kind of a money-making. The only interest in a city is money-making. I don't think that's the only way to look at our towns and cities. We should create an atmosphere of calmness, a sense of secure livelihood that you can stay here for a longest time if you like, without the fear of being evicted just because you are poor. We should have cities that are much more in the old sense of the word, where you can live, you can be born and die in the city in your lifetime. Mm. That would be nice.
Well, just to play devil's advocate, though, you know, buildings have always changed throughout history, though. Communities come and communities go. Can conservation merely be seen as the most recent step in a process of basically a perpetually transforming landscape?
You're right, Shamila. Building changes. So in my history, the visual evolution too, it also changes over the years.
That's right.
Which yes. is right. Which is, of course, the essence of living is this change or the impermanence of things, if you want to think of it as a Buddhist way. But the changes, of course, is inevitable. Or you can also say what changes are good and what changes are not so good and what is sustainable. All this now with the view of the bigger picture of, say, climate change. Huh? With climate change as now in the air, it has been in the air for a long time. You can't breathe those air now anyway.
Literally in the air.
Yeah,
yes.
So I think we should be much more rational. Of course, people in the money market are not rational. People in the commercial market are not rational. They are all very irrational. And it's the biggest casino in the world is the real estate.
I think they might disagree, but
never mind. But I'm just saying that, of course, the people in the money market would not talk about it in this way because they are very happy making money endlessly, bottomlessly, and greedily. But that's up to them. But our world cannot sustain this sort of endless greed. Mm. And I think part of the key to it is endless greed, because we cannot stop being greedy in taking somebody else's. It's a monopoly game at the end of it, no? You can see the, like this World Trade and all this kind of thing, or the whole street being bought over by one landlord, and they can tear everything down so that he can build higher.
Well, to bring it back to what you do, though, right? What role do you believe that people like yourself, artists, creatives, what role do they have in sort of fixing these memories of our historical places and to document these changes?
I can't speak for other artists. Say, for example, Picasso painted his first major anti-war painting called Guernica. Mm-hmm. He was against the Spanish bombardment of a village which was at that time during the Second World War. Painting and art and music doesn't stop war, doesn't stop greed, and doesn't stop destruction. I think art and literature and music has a role, but its role cannot be, because if it did, if it came, if artists say that they can change the world would have been a better place. It has not. So my continuing being an artist is continuing this hope that maybe somebody looking at my painting, looking at my film, come away with a new thought that, yeah, maybe a world where not everything is measured in monetary terms could be a possibility, and I don't know when.
Mm. Well, I do want to know, though, what do you hope people take away from this exhibition?
To say that, look, we have very interesting architectural heritage. This is a vernacular architecture which is done by nameless, unknown craftsmen at that time. And we just need to pay homage to some of these so that the architectural profession, the architectural historian can also, not just an artist, give these early vernacular period of architecture a place in the history of our culture.
We did have someone WhatsApping in to ask whether you will be present at the exhibition on any of the dates, because this person wants to pop by, say hello and get an autograph.
Wow. You could WhatsApp me, and if I happen to be there, we could make arrangement. But this next Saturday, I have a little event, which is to have people come in to do a bit of drawing and sketching with me.
Nice.
At the gallery.
Right.
So if you want to come and join a bit of fun, taking a line for a walk, come.
Well, thank you so much, Victor. I've been speaking with artist Victor Chin about his latest exhibition called Fixing Memories, which documents the straight settlement shop houses of Malaysia and Singapore. The exhibition is on at the Alliance Française Kuala Lumpur until the 18th of December. And for more information, you can visit alliancefrancaise.org.my. If you've missed any part of this interview or any previous Front Row segments, you can download the podcasts on bfm.my, on our BFM app, or on Spotify. You've been listening to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.